frequency response, you can make the correct equalization.
I was going to say that it may be even trickier than that. I'm thinking of a record I have at home by Walter C. Kelly. It's the fifth and last in the Virginian Judge series. If you look that up in Brian Rust's Victor Masterbook, Volume 2, you'll notice that its constituent matrices were recorded some weeks apart. If any of you have the record, you will probably notice, too, that the two sides sound radically different from each other, even though they were recorded at the same location. I infer from that that the engineers were constantly playing with the equalization, tinkering with that recording system, and that most probably they did not have a standardized equalization curve, so you're back to Begess and Begod.
That's true, but what he's asking is for a reference point, which is a very valid point, because it really, even when I came to R&H, there was nothing, there was no list on the wall of all the curves, so to speak, and it was a lot of digging and a lot of other things to get this information, and a lot of these old books are out of print. Yes, sir.
For Dr. Catalano, you said something about the Air Force test or something on tapes show that it's a very temporary storage, or what did they do? They fall apart, or?
Okay, the details of what happens to tape that that is stored under slightly humid conditions, certainly. I shouldn't say slightly humid conditions, under conditions of greater than 60% relative humidity, which is not uncommon in the United States. What happens to the mylar backing is that there is a hydrolysis with reaction that occurs with the reaction of the mylar and the water vapor in the air. This reaction can be slowed down either by storing the tapes at low relative humidity and low temperature, but not too low temperature, because then you have other problems that come about with the storage of mylar. Namely, there are glass and rubber transitions in the mylar which lead to mechanical problems later on. When tape, but under say conditions of like 60% relative humidity and like temperatures in the averaging in the 70 degree Fahrenheit region, there is noticeable deterioration in signal to noise ratio in 5 years' time.
Yes.
Yeah, Steve Barr, I had a amplification of George Blacker's comment regarding equalization on individual records. I seem to recall having seen somewhere a published copy of a Victor file card of that era, and one of the boxes on the file card was a listing for amplifier and equalizer settings. So apparently it was, you know, chosen individually by the engineer according to who he was recording, what he was recording them with, and whether he was hung over that day or not. There's no reason to assume that the other companies weren't doing likewise at the time. So the chances are that, at least for the early recordings, the curve would be almost superfluous.
Well, the point, in fact, is they fool with the top a lot more than they fool with the bottom. And to get the right crossover on a 78 is extremely important, and especially in 16-inch acetates, crossover frequency. And you're right, as far as the top end, I can tell you on the Toscanini acetates and many other, and all of the, not all of them, many of the Metropolitan Opera 50s acetates, they were playing games with that also. And just have to use some judgment in that.
Yeah, two particular cases that have come to mind as far as the bottom end, and here again, I'm just thinking in terms of Victor's. I found that most of the Ellington sides, apparently by design, the base was emphasized considerably, and I found the same to be true, apparently, because they felt it made it sound better, of the theater organ recordings in particular. I mean, my interest is more toward the less serious music, so that's where I've seen it.
Well, you're better off on the low end. They could only pre-emphasize it so much because it was a fixed pitch, and they just there was not enough space on the groove to get an X amount of lines. If they couldn't go overboard on the low end, that's the point to be made, where they could go crazy on the high end.
Well, it may be that what they did is, rather than bring the low end up, to take the high end down to give the same impression. That I don't know. But.
And it could also be, in the case of the Ellington Band, that they simply, when they positioned the instrumentalists, they may just have moved the bass player, be he tuba or string bass, a little farther forward and closer to the mic. We have to remember that for quite a number of years, electrical recording used only a single microphone pickup.
Placed at the discretion of the engineer in most cases.
Right.
So.
It's a very difficult problem, Stephen. Jack made reference to the McIntosh chart. The McIntosh chart, in one example, on Technicord, gives a bass turnover frequency of 750. I have Technicord literature from Technicord in my possession stating it's 1,000, and a turnover of 1,000 on Technicord, at least those Technicords in my collection, sounds much better. Prior to 1932, there's a great deal, and I'm using that as a general area, there's a great deal of variability. After 1932, it's more standardized. But even today, you must distinguish between RIAA, theoretically, and what you actually hear. People say it's recorded, a modern recording on RIAA. The implication is you're going to hear what was recorded. Not necessarily. You're going to hear accurately to the 100th of a dB, if that's what he's got on a good Neumann lathe. You're going to hear accurately what the recording engineer wants you to hear on the RIAA curve. You're not necessarily going to hear the original performance. Inherent equalization, the equalization in the records, and the equalization that the modern recording engineer adds for his own approach, unfortunately can screw it up. And in the later of 78s, they were beginning to do that too. It's a very complex subject. In the last analysis, while the curves published are help, and even they conflict, in the last analysis, you have to listen to the record and treat them individually.
No, I found something else too, because my playback equipment at home uses the old-fashioned ceramic type cartridge, and that seems to have equalization built in that I can't match with a magnetic cartridge and a 10-octave equalizer.
That's another world.
Yes.
Just something to think about.
It's not subject to the same rules quite.
Yes, sir.
I'm Bob O'Brien. I have two short questions. First for Fred Granger. You mentioned a new system coming from Philips. Is that a system for playback of these items, or is that a new cheaper system? Is that for playback or for production?
All I was saying was that the system from Philips, that they were preparing an erasable system where you could re-edit material already.
You mentioned a cheaper laser.
That's already out and being used. I'm just saying that lasers.
Is that a playback or production item?
It's playback only.
Oh. Yeah. The other is for Herr Lechleiter.
Yeah.
These 3,000 discs that you have, what kind of material is on them? Is it music? Is it operatic? Is it instrumental? Is it drama or what?
It's mainly ethnological material. But there are some interesting items from operatic singers.
Did you say phonological?
Ethnological. But there are some operatic singers of the Venus court opera, and some actors of the court theater, and some educating people, like teachers, like Rosa Papier, Josef Gensbacher, anybody know, familiar with, and Alfred Grünfeld and so on. But it's a small part of
it. It does look to me, though, as if the playing time of these records is pretty much on the short side. I doubt very much, for instance, whether you get much more than a minute and a half per side. Am I correct in that?
It's short, yes.
we have to go home. In 2 minutes, I'd like to give Bill Storm 2 minutes. Do you have any? You told me you wanted to say something. Okay.
I always can say one thing, I guess. One of the things that we did attempt to do here this year, I would like to give some credit where credit's due, and that is that you've heard the name floating around of McIntosh. McIntosh Laboratories did bring in a system for us, and it was equalized for the room so that people had a fair representation of what the sound was like. And I think that's a good first step in towards getting some kind of standards, even at this kind of meeting. That's all I want to say.
Before you go, I want to say one thing. The technical committee, or ARSC in general, can only benefit from your comments or your criticisms, if you have any. Now, you should communicate that to the members of the various panels, or myself, or Bill. We're on the technical committee. But it's very easy to criticize others' work or others' methodologies, but the most important thing is if you have something to add, or if you have an idea that you use that you think is a viable idea, you must commit it to writing and send it in, and then we can discuss it. And that's how we come to some sort of universality about audio restoration and transfer technology. Thank you.